SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back 25 minutes into hour three. It's been kind of a, a little bit of a frivolous kind of a get together. Literally a snow day on the radio, right? That's not an unfair way to identify it. Well, we'll actually get serious about two topics with this visit. And Eric Hamelbeck broke the news yesterday that Awesome Again had passed, and then later a press release came from old friends and then coverage by the trades. And, you know, to bettors and to fans and, you know, people that root and observe, you know, these horses, you know, mean one thing to the barns, the breeders, the owners, even the consigners that handle horses, in this case, obviously a homebred, but, for those that put their hands on not even, they don't even have to be Hall of Famers. They don't even have to be champions. Any horse people, there's plenty of people that will tell you about a horse you never heard of that's their favorite, not unusual. But you could tell by Eric's posting yesterday that I put up on Twitter that Awesome Again meant a lot to him and to his wife, Deborah. You could just read it into it. And certainly Eric, in his days with Adina Springs, no shortage of greats during Eric's time at the head of Adina. Eric, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Steve. Thank you very much. I appreciate you having us on today and talking about such an amazing horse and, yeah, amazing part of my life, and really appreciated the comments from Steve. You guys had a fun kind of whirlwind conversation there, and I really appreciate that.
You got there when? Where does he fit in your timeline at Adina?
I started at Adina at the time Dan Hall was the general manager. I started
right.
In 1998. So I actually, Awesome Again was four in his career. And it was a great way to get kicked off. I remember Frank very vividly. I started in 97. Right after the Belmont, right after Touch Gold had won the Belmont. And remember very vividly being interviewed by Frank and Dan for their yearling manager position just a couple of weeks after Touch Gold had won the Belmont. So it was pretty awe-inspiring for a 26-year-old kid that out of Louisiana to come up and have an opportunity to go to work for such an organization. But then just having a great ride towards the end of 1997 and then moving into 1998, it couldn't have been much better riding on the backs of those two horses in particular, but we had some great ones even back then. But with Awesome, it was just always a great connection, and I appreciate the comment Steve made earlier, because I would have been in the same boat when those two retired, and then, of course, we had Wild Rush retire. I truly thought from a pedigree standpoint, Touch Gold would end up being the better individual, as most would think, and the better sire. Awesome Again just proved once again, we always laughed and said he had a bit of a short man syndrome because, he wasn't a big horse. He wasn't an imposing horse, but he, as Bill Drury said many, many times, had the heart of a champion. And, all of that came out. And luckily for us, both homebreds and commercially, he passed it on. So he did some amazing things. So So yeah, you know, the first memory that I really had, kind of that flush back into your brain when I got the call that afternoon, Tuesday afternoon, was, you know, the day we went over to pick him up after the Breeders' Cup. And I remember the Breeders' Cup kind of funny because I didn't get to go. Deborah got to go over with Frank and all the entourage and the family, but I had to work, right? I'm at the Phasic November sale because we're shipping all of our mares in for our private sale, which we were doing at the time. I got to go over for dinner that night, but I didn't get to be in the race, or be in the winner's circle picture, but she did. So that was a lot of fun. But then traveling back over to Pat Burns' barn that next day, and Bill and I picking him up and bringing him home. I remember driving around several days with his foal papers laying on the console of my truck, because, you know, anybody who's had a set of papers, you know, you flip them over in the back and you look at, you know, all those handwritten notes of what they've won and what they've accomplished. And I just remember so vividly that picture in my mind of thinking, God, what a special horse, you know? And it was just something special from that day forward. And, you know, and he was a bit of an underdog. I think Steve kind of really laid that out there. You know, that race for the Breeders' Cup, you know, I watched it several times again yesterday. And that was the best field that, you know, Bill always said it. And we had a picture of the program in the office there. And that, to this day, I think arguably the toughest group of horses ever assembled in one race for the Breeders' Cup. And for him to, you know, just get a little bit of a break and Pat kicking him through there and, you know, winning like a champion that he was, it was pretty special.
Hey, a couple of things, and we're going to listen. We're going to listen to Tom Durkin's fabulous call of the 98 Breeders' Cup Classic. And, of course, he has an undefeated year that started with an allowance race at Churchill, prepping for the Foster. And he had been off for 8 months. And I saw somebody comment, he moved to the Burn Barn and he really moved up. Not really. No, actually. In fact, if you look at his buyers as a 3-year-old and then look at what he did as a 4-year-old, it's right in line and been gone for, you know, 3/4 of a year. So natural development, it's not unusual. I know that everybody seemingly was eager yesterday to somehow infer that, you know, he was boosted some way. The sequence of winning the Foster, the Whitney, the Saratoga Breeders' Cup Handicap, the Hawthorne Gold Cup, which was, you know, at the time still a very important prep for Breeders' Cup Classic, and then the Classic. I mean, that's as strong a sequence of wins for, you know, for a mature horse that, you know, we've really had in you know, the last little while. It's nice enough to have a horse come back as a 4-year-old, you know, these days, given, you know, how many, you know, right, head to the barn. You also, you know, when you mentioned Touch Gold, one of the things that's funny about this, and I'm not going to have time tomorrow, but I'd love to get you know, John Secura could talk about this. John Parada, I would have John invite John to discuss it. You know, they bred Touch Gold, and, you know, both sons of deputy minister is what's funny about this. And you know, one out of a Buck Passer mare, and Awesome Again out of a Blushing Groom mare. And you know, from a pedigree standpoint, they. You know, there wasn't necessarily a lot to differentiate them. It's just kind of funny. It's too bad I can't. This happened after Sid was on yesterday, but I would love for Sid. And I'll save that for maybe for January, and he could riff on why Awesome Again excelled later. You know, as a stallion, and Touch Gold, you know, just had kind of a mundane stud career.
Yeah, no, and we, of course, hindsight's always 20/20, right? You look back at, I look back at Primal Force, which I think is where Sid and his expertise, he'll point to Primal Force. And, I mean, if you look at the lineage from that one mare, with Awesome Again, Macho Uno, then you kick down to Ghost Sapper, then you kick down to Mucho Macho Man. I mean, you know, I did a shadow box for the office that had her halter at the top when she passed away, and fortunately, foaling her last foal. You know, when you put what that mare has done just in reference to Breeders' Cups, it's pretty amazing. So for us, I do remember very vividly early on Bill Mott telling me that he trained Primal for the Firestones, if my memory is correct, and him saying to me she was one of the fastest fillies that he had ever trained, but she had some soundness issues and she had small feet, a little bit like Mr. Prospector, and she ultimately just had a little bit of soundness issues. But I still to this day remember him telling me in the barn how fast she was, and for Bill to say, you know, the one of the fastest fillies he'd ever trained, you know, I knew, and I'd give some credence to that, you know, inside baseball, you know, here's a mare that's going to be underrated, right? And then to look now at her career, it's overwhelming. I remember talking to Tom Ryan with FS Bloodstock one time, who sent me over a mating on a share. And it was pretty close, right, of Macho Uno and Awesome Again. And I said, hey, Tom, you know, I called him, and Frank had a big aversion, obviously, to too much inbreeding. And I asked him about it, and he said, Eric, I want to see what doubling down on Primal Force does. Now, I didn't keep track of that fold by any means, but ultimately my point is that mare was so special. And then you look at what Awesome Again did as a racehorse, and then ultimately as a stallion and his progeny, you know, right up until last year, right? I mean, you know, he's got Sir Winston that wins the Belmont last year.
That's right.
And so, you know, Oxbow Painter was, to me, I thought one of the best racehorses since Ghost Zapper. And then, you know, Game On Dude was a really special horse for me, raising him in Florida. You know, I remember distinctly having a conversation with you know, one of my mentors, Bill Graves. They came down to the farm to look at him, and I said, this is one special horse. And, you know, luckily he turned out to be, you know, one of the best. But, you know, just line after line, you know, we love Ginger Punch, Sugar Shake. I mean, you know, Wilco, we stood as a stallion. Spun Sugar was one of the sweetest mares I'd ever been around in my life. And then obviously you got Ghost Sapper. I mean, and now what he's done as a stallion, you know, again, it's just, I still give a lot of credit and always have to the broodmare sign and the mare lineage. And she was a special mare.
Well, and I can particularly, you know, be excited about the prospects after the first of the year. We've got Carlisle Bell, who we just retired, and she is by Macho Uno. And so I've got Primal Force to lean into as part of the decision-making process. She's, and this, of course, the first and only successful attempt at breeding. I mean, we lost too many babies, frankly. But we're gonna have to use some Primal Force in the decision making process. Because Macho Uno himself, a complete outcross, not a four generation, a complete outcross, yeah. And
really Ghost Zapper as well. When you look at you know, the five generations, but yes, and that's a hallmark stamp of Frank and the matings and what we tried to do. And you know, and then I know we, at least in my mentality, tried to circle back and start bringing in the mentality of hybrid vigor. And, you know, and you point to Primal, and I think a lot of what Tom said that day, you know, my mind went towards that hybrid vigor. You get a sire side and you get a dam side, and you try to put those together, and you'll get something special. So it's definitely a point to look at, and ultimately toughness. You know, that primal Ghost Zapper, certainly awesome again. Just very tough, hardy individuals that, you know, make the champion of a racehorse. We always laughed and said that, we couldn't sell Ginger Punch. You know, tried as a yearling, tried as a 2-year-old, and she was just an average looking horse. And in 07, when she won the Ladies Classic, I remember she had a bit longer hair. You know, she didn't look the best. Obviously, it was a dark day at Monmouth and rainy, and Frank was like, you know, she doesn't look that good, Chad. You know, and Chad was there, and Chad just kind of shook his head and said, she's ready, and boom, she was damn ready that day. But you saw it in her eye. You saw it in Awesome. You know, those horses. Ghost Zapper was special because he looked you in the eye and he just walked away from you. Primal and Awesome and certainly a horse like Ginger Punch and even Spun Sugar, they looked you in the eye and said, let's fight. And then they just kept it close just to give you a little bit of hope, and then they'd kill you. But yeah, great family, great lineage. You know, it's sad to see him go, but to know what he left on this earth and the stamp in the industry, and having some memorabilia is something special for me. I know how much Pat and Jill Byrne, Jill loved Awesome Again, still does. So it was a special connection for all of us. So very appreciative for what I had with the opportunity to work for somebody like Frank and Mrs. Stronach, and yeah, it was special. And to have the connections to some of these horses, it's never going to go away.
No, exactly.
We'll lose them, but the connections will always be there, and they'll always be great memories.
Let's listen to Tom Durkin calling the 98 Breeders' Cup Classic Awesome Again, and probably the best assembly of talent in the Classic ever.
They're off in the Breeders' Cup Classic. And Coronado's Quest is the first away from the gate. Arch was off to a good beginning. Skipaway is in behind Arch in the early stages. Silver Charm is ahead of Skipaway. He's third. And the outside gentleman races fourth. As they pass beneath the twin spires for the first time, it is Coronado's Quest to be the pacemaker. Arch is second. And the two grays on the inside, Skipaway on the outside, Derby winner Silver Charm. In behind them at the inside, European Swain. Running Stag is just next to Silver Charm. Two lengths back on the outside, it's Gentleman. Then a break of three to Stablemates. Awesome Again and Touch Gold. Seven lengths back to Belmont winner Victory Gallop. He is about a dozen lengths from the lead. The opening quarter goes in 23 and 2/5 seconds. The opening half mile was 47 and 3. It's an honest pace here in the Classic with Coronado's Quest leading the way, prompted by Arch. Skipaway is tucked away on the inside. There appears to be a narrow opening for him, and there he goes. Gary Bailey asking a little bit more from Skipaway. Silver Charm in a good spot on the outside as they approach the far turn. And Gentleman starts his engine as they move for the far turn. He's only 3 lengths from the lead. Swain is in behind horses, then Running Stag. Awesome Again on the inside, Touch Gold. And still well behind is Victory Gallop. It is still Coronado's Quest leading this all-star field around the far turn. He's there by length and a half. Arches in between horses. Skipaway is still down toward the inside. Here comes Silver Charm. Silver Charm coming with a bold rally on the far outside. Skipaway toward the inside. And Swain is coming with his rally. And farther back it is Awesome Again. Victory Gallop is gathering momentum. One furlong to go. Coronado's Quest. Silver Charm and Swain, the three of them. Not today for Skipaway. Victory Gallop continues to close. Silver Charm short lead. Here comes Awesome Again, who's flying in between horses. A wild finish to the Classic. Awesome Again has won. Awesome Again is the winner. A three-way photo for second among Victory Gallop, Silver Charm, and Swain, who went to the far outside. And there is the race winner, Pat Day, with Awesome Again, coming from well off the pace today. Skip Away will not be the all-time money winner. And there is a jubilant Pat Day aboard the winner. Disappointment for Skip Away in the Classic.
Great Durkin call. And, you know, he had a lot. He had, you know, with all those moves that were happening at once, and then, you know, with Swain wandering out, I bet Swain actually that day, and, you know, him wandering out, and Durkin kept it all together.
Yeah. No, he was a magician with his words, and there's some good ones, but, he's definitely one of the best, and that was a great call. And again, the way he awesome punched through that hole and just got to the front was a great depiction of how he worded everything.
Now let's shift the gears from Awesome Again to what's happening in Washington here at the 11th hour. And Eric, we've had several conversations with you and with the THA's Alan Foreman all during the year as this HISA legislation has, you know, moved really from backbench to the front. What is the latest in terms of this getting an appropriate discussion or just being slapped on without debate?
Well, and that's really it, Steve. You know, we still, for obvious reasons, you know, we've continued to try to educate and show some opposition to the way the bill is structured at this time. And we have continued to ask for a proper debate, proper procedural protocol. And that would be just like what happened on the House side, at least going to a committee for debate and allowing those who did have opposition to voice those concerns and or suggested amendments. Again, I don't know that anybody in my organization would say that they are completely opposed to federal legislation. I don't think we feel as if we need it. But, yeah, could there be some better things in a federal bill than what we are looking at? I believe the answer is yes. But what has gone on now is very disturbing to me, just, I guess, generally saying as an American, here's where politics gets very frustrating. This bill has never been to the committee. We have multiple what we call facility members, and those are members that have racetracks in their jurisdiction on the Senate side as well as the House side, that are opposed to the way the bill is made up now. We have members that have offered amendments. We have discussed possible changes that could at least make the bill a better and a real compromise, unlike has been described. And those members are not going to hear or get the chance to voice those suggestions. It's not going to committee. We've been told by the majority leader's office there will be no amendments. And because there is significant opposition, the plan is, or at least the consideration is, to put it on something that is a must pass, in which case, even if you did object, you're not going to want to because it's a funding measure. So that's where politics bothers me. Both sides. Doesn't matter. You know, I've always said I have one party, and that's horse racing. I don't care. I've voted D. I voted R. I've voted independent. You have to prove to me that you want the best for horse racing to get my vote. So this is where I get very disturbed at politics and power and money, because it seems pretty obvious to me that the majority doesn't think that in its current form, whether you are for or against federal legislation, the current form doesn't fit everyone. And I think the majority of people are saying that, and this is where the majority is going to get swept under the rug based off of politics and power. You know, my recent explanation and member discussions and office visits have been You know, we continue to hear, rightfully so, COVID restrictions should be based around science, not politics. And that's what we're asking for this bill. This bill shouldn't be based around politics. It should be based around science and what is best. And I think there is some common ground. I certainly, again, say that we appreciate anything that has to do with safety and the expansion that has come about through some of the changes of the bill. But the way this is moving through should be disturbing to everybody, that it's going to get put on as a, in my opinion, a pet project that's going to get put on to something that's reliant on funding and or COVID relief and not go through proper procedural protocol, I think is sad, and I think it's sad for politics. And again, I'm not talking about a party, one side or the other. I just think that, and as we see now, we need to let the majority win. And ultimately, that's what I hope we can still try to convey with some members. We just want it to go through proper procedural protocol. We certainly don't feel as if this warrants being tacked on to some sort of year-end measure.
Well, and you know, one thing I think I only gave it a passing mention, but you know, Pat Cummings wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago, seemingly with the cow not only out of the barn, the cow, you know, the cow had you know, set up shop miles down the road. You and I and Alan too, we've discussed for 18 months the specter of having the provisions that originally were in versions of this legislation that restricted funding mechanisms involving takeout. That was a part where there was no way that that was going to go forward. Then, you know, in this incantation, that was stripped away. And suddenly, literally with the meat in the grinder, now you're going to wave the hand and say, oh, wait a minute, you can't be making the players pay for this. We've warned about this for a year and a half. And if this thing gets tacked on, you know, then you know what they're going to hear. Then we're going to hear way too late. They're you know, we're the player. You know, we've been saying the players are going to get screwed here, and it's a little late to start, you know, calling timeouts now.
Exactly, and you know, personally, Steve, and you know me well enough, I think most people have heard my message. I have always felt the lack of understanding of what the funding mechanism is going to be has continued.
They have no idea.
My biggest fear of this legislation, and what ultimately has become, you know, how it's getting pushed through, is power and money. And, you know, LASIKs, you can be on one side or the other. We can have that debate, and probably will continue to have that debate for a long time. But how is this industry right now, especially this year, even if it gets passed and we have a year to recoup, there's going to be a lot of jobs lost. Agribusiness is very important for this country, and racehorse training operations are a part of agribusiness. And if they go under, there's nothing we're going to be able to do about it. And ultimately, if there is a decision by some higher-ups to pass this buck down the line and make horse players pay for it, or continue to tack additional fees on top of owners, you know, again, I've said it on this show before, and everybody knows me, that you know, there, I believe the two most important entities in this industry, horse players and owners, and this bill has a propensity to hurt both, and that is damning to this industry.
Succinctly put, and there's people, much like a certain percentage of the electorate, that are supporting this thing against their own interests. The thing that's most troubling and problematic is the people who think that this legislation is something that it's not. And you absolutely in the wake of the press conference at Keeneland, where everybody threw their weight behind this, and you know you had Yertle the Turtle at the front of the stage. Everybody, you could just tell by the reaction in commentary and in response that people have no idea what this thing actually was. They think it's some sort of panacea for a whole bunch of issues that it doesn't come close to addressing. And then when you bring that up, you hear, well, this will be the foundation to address all those things. I'm sorry. I don't buy that. I'm not supporting it. It's ridiculous. This whole thing is a gigantic Trojan horse. And as a result, there's going to be the two parties that you just brought up, owners and players, that this will end up at their feet and in their pockets, and you'll end up losing both, you know, as a result and in complete disgust, because they really, whoever's supporting it from this arena, you're in for a surprise.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I don't want to take up too much more time, but
no, it's fine. We're done.
It's definitely the lack of understanding of the bill. I mean, I still see it. I think I saw it this week on social media. There was a discussion or a bantering back and forth. And again, people don't quite understand what the bill does encompass. And, you know, it was basically a shot at the stewards and a shot at the ARCI. And, you know, again, a lack of understanding that this bill doesn't have anything to do with all of the model rules. This bill certainly doesn't give the authority to govern racing stewards. So, again, this understanding that some people have that we're going to have on the other side of this some sort of NFL commission, it's still very frustrating to me that people don't understand the bill or haven't taken the time to learn what it really entails, because that you're not going to get on the other side of this and all of a sudden have – you know, one set of complete uniform rules. Now, could we do that? We could, but not with this bill. This bill doesn't address that. So you're right. I mean, it's very frustrating that people still think that it's going to just be this all-encompassing measure that takes care of everything. It isn't. It isn't.
Eric Hamelbeck, everybody. Eric the Tiger, obviously watch the trades, and you're be in contact with your local HBPA that will be forwarding these updates as they happen, if it's going to happen here in the next during the the waning moments of the legislative session. I saw that the Tigers signed the the top recruit in the country.
Yeah. No, we've done well. We need it this year. I'm glad we beat Florida, but Coach O's got to circle the wagons, and he's got to bring in some big time help. So hopefully we found a quarterback. But
well, you don't have a lot to complain about down there and with the Bayou Bengals. Eric Hamelbeck, everybody. Eric, for you and Deborah and family and the entire HBPA family and collective, best wishes. Merry Christmas. Happy, healthy New Year. Thanks for everything this year.
Thank you, Steve. Best to you and Tina as well. And the grandma.
Eric Hamelbeck. There we go. We are going to get Tony and Rich in tomorrow. This was important to have this conversation with Eric. So I'm glad we saw it through. And we'll see you out into the day. Lots of good action. And that'll include this pick six at Los Al. I'll write it up, put it up at the website in a couple of hours, and we'll close out 2020 tomorrow. Thanks to Case back in the studio, and Steve Haskin and Dave Powell earlier, Brad Free. Productive morning. And some nice time spent with Eric here about Awesome Again and what's going on with the HISA legislation. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9, everybody, and we'll talk to you for weekend preview at the races. We'll get to that Remington action and Fairgrounds Super Santa Saturday with Marcus Hirsch and more. Thanks. Talk to you in the morning.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The exciting Southern California Thoroughbred Daytime Racing Circuit continues with the LA County Fair Meet at Los Alamitos Racecourse. The meet is off to a great start with strong fields throughout, and the stakes action continues at the Orange County Track, headed by the Los Alamitos Futurity on Saturday, December 19th. The Futurity has seen some tremendous winners in years past, like Standouts McKenzie in 2017, Improbable in 2018, and Thousand Words in 2019. Watch and wager on all the great racing action on TVG, plus all other major ADW providers, headed open satellite locations. On weekdays, our first post will be 1 p.m., while weekends will feature a 12:30 p.m. first post time. Plus, our wagering menu includes a pair of $1 pick fours, a traditional $2 pick six, and the popular 14% players pick five. And as we continue to follow our local guidelines, we'd like to thank all the great racing fans across the nation for their continued support of Los Alamitos Racecourse. Watch and wager on exciting Southern California thoroughbred racing. The LA County Fair Meet at Los Alamitos continues through Sunday, December 20th. For more, visit losalamitos.com.